for listening to the Thornapple Valley Church podcast. Thank you for joining us. Our hope is for you to be encouraged and to connect with God during this message. If you'd like to know more about Thornapple Valley Church, visit tvcweb.com.
Well, hello, everybody. All right, let's try it again. A little energy here. Hello, everybody. That's great. And all of you guys in Deltland, Middleville, blessings on you as well. So glad that you're with us. Some of you who have been around for a while may remember that I've talked about my younger brother, Dave, who not only has successfully summited Mount Everest, which is an amazing feat in and of itself when you think about it, he's also done something else that's very incredible, and that is that he's summited the highest mountain on every continent of the world, something known as the Seven Summits. So on every continent, he has summited the highest mountain on that continent. And relatively few people in the history of the world, we're talking like between 400 and 500 people in the history of the world, have actually accomplished something like this. So when people, I mean, it's pretty amazing, yeah. But when people start, you know, when the conversation comes up about my brother, I'll talk about him and brag about him. I speak with such pride. And then I get all done and said, yeah, he's amazing. And I hate him. That's how I usually finish it. And obviously, I don't hate him, but I think you can understand what I'm saying. It's a little bit hard to live in the shadow of something like that, which is just a stunning feat when you think about it. A handful of people in the world who have ever done something like this, and he's one of those people. Recently, I heard a comedian, Nick Bargatze, and I don't know if you've heard of him, but he was talking about something along these lines, and it kind of made me think of what it feels like to be Dave's brother. So it's just a minute, so just listen to this.
A lot of times when athletes retire, they can do motivational speaking too. So one type of athlete that you can hire is guys that have climbed Mount Everest, and they go and like talk to like businesses to like motivate them because it's relatable. It's not relatable at all. This guy climbed Mount Everest, and he's going to try to talk to people that are trying to park as close as they can to the building. And it's like, this is the guy. This guy's going to really get us moving. What he does is he asks everybody, he wants to know, he's like, what's your Mount Everest? Like, what's your toughest thing in life? And before you answer, just remember, his is Mount Everest. So it better be pretty good, you know? Like, mine's like, I have trouble not stopping at McDonald's late at night. That's how embarrassing. I would be like, you know, they're open. I don't know how long you're on the mountain, but now they're open 24 hours.
So that's kind of what it feels like to me to be the brother of Dave, who has accomplished such amazing feats. And I imagine I can relate more to the guy talking about going to McDonald's than I can summoning Mount Everest. And probably some of you would feel the same way as I do. But it's a great question these motivational speakers ask. You know, what's your Everest? What's your mountain? What is like stopping you from becoming all that you could be? Now, the only problem when you ask the question like that is that we have a propensity, I think most of us, at least some of the time, is we go, okay, what's the mountain in front of me that's stopping me from being what I could be? And so what we tend to do is we tend to look outside ourselves for those things around us that seem to be inhibiting us, that seem to be stopping us. So like we'll say something like, if I could just get a job besides this thing I do, something fulfilling that would mean something to me, then I think I could be, or if these circumstances could just change so I could become, you know, what I want to be, or you know, if I could have a supportive husband, if I could have somebody different than the one I have, you know, that would just kind of under support me and that type of thing instead of what I have. And so we look at all these things, all kinds of stuff like that are outside of us, But this is an interesting thing, because what we miss is that the real mountain you face and that I face that keeps us from becoming all we can be, interestingly, is none of those things. Because see, it's not outside you. It's what's inside you where life really counts. That's where you'll find the mountain. Now, if you know much about the life of Jesus, you know that though he was loved by the poor, the disenfranchised, the broken people, people whose lives were a mess, he was greatly loved and followed by them. But the elite of his day pretty much despised him across the board. Now, it was interesting, really, when you think about it, because Jesus was like turning everything upside down, and he was threatening the status quo. In those days, the elite were often the religious leaders in the community, and they were highly regarded, unlike what we would know in this culture. I mean, today, preachers rank right down with lawyers and terrorists and all that, right at the bottom of the bureau. But in Jesus' day, they were like the elite. These were well-educated, well-to-do. They were well-dressed. They were well-thought of, highly regarded by their community. They have this great reputation. And then along comes Jesus, who basically says to these guys, these religious leaders of the day, says, guys, you got it backwards. It's not how you look to people. It's not about what people perceive you as or what is on the outside. It's about what's going on the inside. See, Jesus knew what most of the people in the populace didn't know about these leaders is that though they looked like they were all together on the outside, internally they were a mess. They were a wreck. In fact, when he addressed them, he had some strong words to say about it. Just a heads up, this really is pretty strong. But take a look at what he says. This is in Matthew chapter 23. Jesus says, speaking to them, he says, you're hopeless, you religion scholars and Pharisees, frauds. He says, you're like manicured grave plots, grass clipped, the flowers are bright, but 6 feet down, it's rotting bones and worm-eaten flesh. People look at you and they think you're saints, but beneath the skin, you are what? You're total frauds. I told you it was strong words. And I'm guessing most of us, when we read something like that, we're like, okay, well, thank God, you know, I'm not exactly like that. I'm pretty sure that probably wouldn't be said to me, but I'm actually would like to challenge all of us on this one. Starting with myself. See, this is what I think, and you can feel free to disagree with me, but I think we're more like the people Jesus was talking to than we want to admit or realize. I think we tend to be far more concerned about how we look on the outside than what's going on the inside. And I know some of you may say, I would disagree with that, but honestly, I think it's like, it's culture. It's our culture. We feel like whatever you consider looking good, you feel like you gotta look good. I mean, you think about it. One of the biggest businesses in our culture is outward appearance, how you look. And I think I can say with confidence that we may be more subject to this than we want to admit, just simply by us being honest and acknowledging the time we put into thinking about how do I look? How are people going to perceive me? You know, we're concerned about our hair or our outfits or how much weight we have on our body or how people will perceive us and how we talk, how we think about things. And we spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about our outside and what people think when they look at us. And I think I can say this because it's just true. It's really true, and I'm not just talking here about, you know, cosmetics and clothes. I'm talking about everything, you know, how you act and people perceive you and thinking about that. For example, I've never really cared about clothes. They've never really meant anything to me, so I don't think, you know, will people think I look like I'm well-dressed, but I do think, how will they perceive the way I'm acting? Come on, does anybody know what I'm talking about? And sometimes I find myself behaving in ways not so much because I believe that's the best thing or that's really who I am, but because I want to be perceived as someone who is successful or kind or thoughtful or does certain right things. And we wrestle with this. I think we don't even realize it, but we do exactly what Jesus said. We work at like polishing the outside so it looks really good, while what's inside, where stuff actually counts, not all the time, but is often mostly like unaddressed. Like we're not really paying attention to it. Not like we should, at least from my perspective. Jesus said it this way, and again, speaking strongly and speaking to the religious leaders of his day, he said, this blind Pharisee first cleaned the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. First, he said, first, you work on the inside. You work on what's on the inside of you. Now, that's a strong message, and that's what I want to talk about as we start this series. It's going to be 3 weeks long called On Becoming. And I want to start by just giving you what I would call the thesis for the coming weeks. And by the way, I'm using the Socratic method, which would be to pose it as a question. And this is my heart, that you could somehow hear what I have to say. Guys sitting in Delton, Middleville, if you're watching online, please listen. Just think about this. So here's the question. Who are you becoming? Who are you becoming? Not on the outside, not how you look to people, not how people perceive you, like, I'm getting into good shape and people are really noticing my six-pack. You know, I've always had a 24-pack or whatever, you know, but I'm not how people perceive you, not what they think of you, but who are you really on the inside? Who are you becoming? And just be clear on this, because here's the deal. You are always becoming something. It's always happening. I know sometimes people say, I'm the same person I was 10 years ago. I don't seem to change. I've tried, but nothing changed. Not true. You're always becoming something. Maybe more of what you were, maybe less, maybe something else entirely different, but you're always becoming something because you are not static. The Christian writer C.S. Lewis said it this way. He said, every time you make a choice, you're turning that central part of you, okay, he's talking about what's on the inside, you're turning that central part of you, the part that chooses, into something a little different from what it was before. And all your life long, you're slowly turning this central thing either into a heavenly creature or into a hellish creature. To the one kind of creature is heaven, that is joy and knowledge and power and peace. To the other means madness and horror and idiocy and rage and impotence and eternal loneliness. And he says, each of us at each moment is progressing to the one state or the other. You are not static. You are becoming something. Who are you becoming? Please think about this. Please don't miss this. I could be wrong, but I think for so many of us, I don't even know that we think about this much. We're just trying to get through the week. We're just trying to make ends meet. We're just trying to figure things out. And I understand all of that. And we feel sometimes like we can barely handle all the demands on our lives. But so often, I think what we end up like, anybody remember the old pinball machines? All you boomers know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, the real pinball machines, not some video thing, but the kind that had glass on them and you could see that ball bouncing around in there. Too often, I think what we are is we're the pinball and not the flipper. We're just being knocked around by the things in life and we're going after this thing and then we get an idea and we'll do this thing and we go after that and we follow this latest trend or we watch this newest movie or we do this thing. And I'm not saying those things are all evil, but what I'm saying is it's like we aren't saying this is who I know I am to be becoming and move in that direction. We're letting life bounce us around. And so every time we make a little choice, we're turning, remember what Lewis said, we're turning in one direction or the other. And always that's happening in our lives all the time. You're choosing, and you may not even acknowledge it because it might be passive, but you're choosing what you're becoming. The choice of who you are becoming is in your hands. Be clear on this. It is your hands. That is one of the things that God absolutely gives us. Now, to be clear, you don't always have a choice in what happens to you. I understand that. And I certainly would not imply that you can manipulate everything that happens to you. Folks, the truth is life throws all kinds of crazy curveballs at us that we never saw coming and we would never ask for and don't want if they happen to us. Would anybody agree with that? And have you noticed that when life throws these curveballs, they're not fair? Has anybody noticed that? It's like one person at 40 goes in feeling sick and they're diagnosed with cancer and 6 months later they're dead. Another person lives a completely unhealthy lifestyle until they're 95. And it's unfair. You have very little control over the stuff that gets thrown at you. You don't have control over how the economy is going to be or how things are going to happen or whether somebody's going to hurt you or not. Those things come whether you want them to or not. You don't have much control over that stuff. But the one thing you do have control over is who you are becoming. In the middle of all the stuff that life is throwing at you, you have choices in how you respond. Come on, is that true? You have choices in what you do with it, how you deal with it, how you come. Who you are becoming, and this is what I want you to get. I want you thinking about who you're becoming, but then I want you to realize this. That's in your hands. That is in your hands. It's not somebody else's. It's in your hands. And not to sound dramatic, but nothing is more important in your life than who you are becoming inside. Not your house or your car or your job or the things that you're struggling and wrestling with right now. Nothing is more important than who you are becoming inside. Think about what Scripture says. This is one of my favorite verses in all of Scripture. It says, above all else, guard your what? Guard your heart. Why? For everything you do flows from it. Not from your job, not from your finances, not from your 403B or whatever it is that you have. None of those things. Everything you do flows from what is in here. And so above all else, it tells us, guard your heart. You think about it. It's the inside stuff. It's not the other stuff. It's not, if I could just catch a break, things would be better. If my wife would stop being so unkind or criticizing, if my boss, it's not that stuff. Because what I can guarantee you is when you get that one fixed, another nasty one's going to come at you. Anybody know what I'm talking about? And the hits just keep coming, don't they? It's not that. It's what's inside you. It's the person you're becoming. So, here's the first of two key statements that I want to make in this series. And this first one is real simple. It is, who you're becoming is the most important part of your life. Who you are becoming is the most important part of your life. Because remember what we just read, you guard your heart because everything flows from that, from who you are inside, who you are becoming. So I got to ask one more time, and I just want to provoke you on this. Who are you becoming? Who are you becoming? Now, if you're like me, you know, you hear something like this and you go, look, I know. There's some things in my life I need to work on. And, you know, I haven't been real nice at, you know, work lately. Or I've got, this is what we have a tendency to do is we look at this and we kind of go, okay, I got to fix this and I probably should work on this. And at least in some ways, you know, I know I need to be a little different than I am. And there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is that too often what we do is we look at our life in pieces. And we're just fixing the most recent crisis, one, or we're following the most recent culturally dominant idea. Like, I gotta lose weight. I gotta lose weight, or I gotta get in shape, or I gotta change this thing, or I gotta start being more positive, or whatever. Without having, now listen, this is, if you don't hear anything else, just hear this. We do those things without having any real clarity on who it is we want to become. So what we're doing, in effect, is we're dabbling with things. You know, I've been a little stressed lately, so I'm gonna do some meditation, and we dabble in it. And of course, these things seldom last because they're not about who we're becoming. They're just the latest idea, or they're just a response to a crisis in our lives. I read a book this last year, full disclosure, it was not a Christian book, but it made so much sense from a biblical standpoint to me. The author, his name is James Clear. And he argues, I think rightfully, that we so often work so hard to reach goals that seem good. I'm going to build my business to this much. I'm going to do these things. But they're not really attached to who we are. To who we are at a core level, to our, if you will, our identity, who we know we should be becoming. And because they're not attached to that, this is why so often we start so many things and we never follow through on them really, because they're not attached to who we are, to what our identity is. Listen, I'll just make this statement and I hope you can hear it. Your goals, and everybody should have goals in their lives. I'm an advocate for goals. I think we should have them. But your goals should be driven first by your identity, by who it is you know you want to become. That should drive the goals in our lives. When we're clear on our identity, who we want to become, then you ask the question, well, what is a person who is that way, who is who I want to become? What do they do? How do they do life? What are the actions and habits of a person like that? And there's where we find our focus for goals. When we have clarity on who we believe we are called to become, that's where we begin to establish behaviors and habits that move us more deeply in that direction. And being clear on who you want to be focuses everything else. Some of it feels, we feel so unfocused. It's like, I'm just all over the map. I'm just everywhere. I'm everywhere. And I wonder, I don't know. I can't speak for you, but I think in my life this has been true. It's because I'm not clear on who I'm living to become. I mean, I might give some vague, well, I want to be nice, or I want to be a good husband, or whatever, but who are you becoming? Who are you called to become? I'll give you a quote from that author I mentioned, James Clear, that I thought was really good. He was talking about the importance of knowing your identity, being clear on what your identity, what you want it to be is, or who you want to become. And in effect, he was calling it the bullseye in life, which I think is a reasonable statement. And then he goes on to say this. He says, and yet, maybe I missed this one. Can I go back one? There we are. There's a quote. Thank you. And yet we often live our lives this way, he says. We wake up and face the world day after day. In other words, we keep firing arrows. We're up. We're doing all these things. But we're focused on everything except the bullseye. Does that have a ring of truth in it for anybody? Have you gone through your day sometimes and gone, what did I even do? Chasing your tail, you know? Just busy, 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 busy. But you lost sight of the thing that you're really called to be, of the bullseye. It has a ring of truth to it. This is a huge thing. Beware. Listen, I understand that we have lives and we need to have jobs and we need to make money and we got to pay the bills and we have all these things. But too often I think our goal has become getting through the week instead of becoming who we feel God has called us to be. The teenager or man or woman or whatever that we're meant to be. Don't you want to be more than just a person that tries to get through the week? And just tries to get stuff done, checked off on the list? Isn't there something more? Beware of focus and goals in your life that aren't derived from your identity. Just because other people are doing it, just because it's popular in the culture, and well, I'm going to start doing meditation. It sounds like it's really cool and everything. Well, okay, fine if you're doing meditation, but why? How does that relate to who you know you should be becoming? Whatever it is, it should be supporting the desired identity that we have for our lives. Because if we don't do those things, if we don't have clarity on the identity, and if our goals don't come out of our identity, what happens is we don't stay with them. I mean, how many things have we started and stopped and they never went anywhere? Because they're not really connected to who we are. But when they're connected to who you are, you're far more likely to stay doing them. Let me give you just some simple examples of what I mean by this. So for example, instead of making a goal to get straight A's, your goal is to become a person who studies every day and becomes a lifelong learner. Do you see the difference there? It's not to finish a painting. It's to become an artist. It's not to do your job. Just go and do your job. It's to be a man or woman of strong character that impacts their world through their job. Because they have a higher calling. They know who they're called to be. See, this is why so much of the stuff that we try to do doesn't last. It's not driven by who we are. Now, I'm aware of the fact that I probably beat this thing almost to death, and I did so unapologetically. This has been a thing I feel like God's been working in my heart on. You know, I'm in a season of life change, obviously, and so you go, well, what's the next thing? But let me tell you the truth about me. My identity never really was, I'm a pastor. My identity was first that I'm a child of God. And I think I've had to be provoked in that. That who I am called to become, and I'm still making little decisions, it's moving me heavenward or downward. And I just want to provoke your thinking on this. Who are you becoming? Are you cleaning the inside of the cup? Or are you just so busy trying to keep the outside of the cup look good that you've lost sight of what it's really about? And we're going to talk about some of this stuff in the coming weeks. But let me just kind of wind this down by just giving you two or three simple thoughts here. Just things I want you to think about. If you want to get clear on who you're becoming, if you want to become that. Here's the first thought, and I've already implied this, but just Would you stop blaming circumstances for who you are? We live in such a blame culture. It's not my fault. If this hadn't happened to me, if I had a decent job, if I didn't have such a rotten boss, can we just be clear on something? And you all know this is true, that you can take two people and they go through the same circumstance, some terribly difficult thing. And you know this, that you can have two entirely different outcomes in their lives. Come on, is that true? One comes out and they're like, they're stronger, they're smarter, they're more of who they know they're meant to be. And the other person comes out whining and complaining, and why is my life so miserable? And they just seem to keep going downhill. And it has nothing to do with what happened to them. It has everything to do with how they responded to it when it happened. And that only comes from the inside. It's not about the stuff that happens to you. I know maybe you had mean parents, and I'm sorry for that. I hate that. But in the end, you have to stop blaming that for who you are. Because it's not that in the end that made you. You made choices all along the way, and you will continue to. And even if you've been blaming something, you can stop and change. See, look, it's often the things that we don't want to happen in our lives, that we hate like crazy, that are actually some of the best growth things in our life. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I mean, you often only see it in retrospect, but it's often those things. And you can blame your issues on daddy or your boss or mean people next door or circumstances, but as they say, that dog won't hunt. Who you are becoming is in your hands. And I'll be honest with you, I have struggled with this a lot. When things aren't going well and I don't like things I've done or my behavior, I want to blame anybody but me. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Or y'all, I'm not sure if I'm looking at a painting of angels or if y'all know what I mean, but I find myself so often wanting to blame things, but I have to own it. Stop blaming circumstances for who you are. And then the second thing, and again, this is just a challenge, and I've been trying to say it through this whole talk, but get clarity on who you want to become. And I'm talking about more than just how you look on the inside. I'm talking about, who is this in here? What kind of person is this in here? Get clarity on it. Not some vague, I just want to be a nice guy. And No. What do you feel like you are called to be? And I think you can sometimes look at what you're doing with your life and you understand why you're never going to get there if you don't change. Because you don't have clarity on where you're going. And then last thought, and that is, you know, stop blaming circumstances and get clear on who you want to become. And then once you do, map it out. Now, I'm a list person. I'll be honest with you. I mean, the first thing on my list is make a list, and then, you know, I can check that off, and then I go on to, I love lists. I love having clarity. I'm a planner. I'm strategic in my thinking in that way. But I don't think, if you don't make a map of who you want to be and how a person who is that way gets there, you never get there. You just always think, I wish. You don't move in that direction. And we'll talk more about this in the weeks to come, but the answer is pretty simple. How do I get there? I do the stuff. I make a decision to start setting goals and habits and practices of doing the stuff that a person who is like that does until it becomes muscle memory. And that leads to the second key statement in this series. And I'll mention these in the coming weeks as we talk about this. But remember, the first one is who you're becoming is the most important part of your life. But this next one is so important. And that is, you plan your doing around who you want to become. I'll just say it again because you need to hear it. You plan your doing around who you want to become, not around how you feel today. If I plan my doing around how I feel today, I have days where I would do nothing but curl up in bed and suck my thumb. Anybody know what I'm talking about? If I plan my doing around how people treat me or some bad thing that's coming at me, I will never become who I want to become, who I know I'm called to become. I have to choose to plan my doing around what I know I'm called to be. And so I do that whether I wake up in the morning and feel like I want to or not. The truth is, this is a huge thing. As much as possible, I want to lead my life. I want to engage my life based on who I want to be. Because as I do those actions, it starts to become who I am. Because remember what Lewis said, we make these choices. And they're always making us become a little more or a little less or whatever. And so I make those choices in effect. What I'm challenging you to do is to be the flipper and not the pinball. And as I said, we'll talk more about this, but let me just give you an example. If you say that God's important to your identity, and some of you listening may say, I don't even know where I'm at with God. I get that, and I respect that. But for those of you who would say, I want God to be core to my identity. Okay, then the question is, what does a person who lives like that do? There's your map. There's your map. You still got to work. You still got to do those all stuff. But there is your map. So we'll talk about a couple things next week that I think if you think this through seriously, you're going to consider as part of who you're becoming. But I just want to leave you with this challenge. Who you're becoming is the most important part of your life. So plan your doing around who you want to become. So this is what we're going to do at all our campuses now, Delta Middleville. Would you guys all stand up? Because we got a little time, and I'm going to pray, and then we're going to worship together for a few moments before we're done. So let me pray. Holy Spirit, it's easy for me to talk this stuff. I know it's hard to live, but just help us to open our hearts and really to ask you, who are you calling me to become? And then to clean, as you said, Jesus, the inside of the cup and dish. And be less concerned about what the outside is. Come, Holy Spirit, in this time, in Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening to the Thornapple Valley Church Podcast. If you found this message encouraging, we invite you to share it. For more information, visit tbcweb.com.